Good morning, and thank you all for standing by. This is the conference coordinator. All lines will be placed on listen-only until we're ready for the question-and-answer session of today's call. This call is also being recorded. If you do have any objections, please disconnect at this time. I would now like to introduce your speaker, Mr. Tom Skinner. You may begin, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Lori, and thank you all for joining us today, where CDC is going to provide an update on domestic influenza A H3N2 variant infections in humans. With us today is Dr. Joseph Brzee, a medical epidemiologist in our influenza division at CDC. His last name is spelled B-R-E-S-E-E. Dr. Brzee is going to provide a 3- to 5-minute overview, and then we'll get to your questions and answers. Also joining us today is Dr. Lisa Ferguson. That's spelled F-E-R-G-U-S-O-N. She is a veterinarian in the National Animal Health Policy Program Office at the United States Department of Agriculture. She will be available to help answer questions when we get to the Q&A. So I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Brzee at this time.
Thanks, Tom. Hello, everybody. This is Joe Brzee. I'm from the flu division at CDC. Today, I'm going to give you a quick update on an increase in the number of cases of influenza A H3N2 variant virus because on August 3rd, today, CDC's FluView, U.S. Weekly Influenza Surveillance Report, announced 12 new cases of H3N2 variant virus infection from three different states: Hawaii, Indiana, and Ohio. The virus was first detected in humans last fall, late last summer, actually, in July of 2011. And since July 12th, 2011, there have been 29 total cases of H3N2 variant virus infection detected, including the 16 cases occurring in the last 3 weeks. The 29 cases of infection with this H3N2 virus since the fall of 2011 is a significant increase in the number of detections for these types of virus that we've seen in recent years. All 29 cases were infected with H3N2V viruses that contain the Matrix, or M gene, from the influenza A H1 pandemic virus. This M gene may confer increased transmissibility to and among humans compared with other variant influenza viruses. But before I summarize or further summarize the cases and the investigations underway, let me give you a brief background about these viruses to put things into context. So like humans, influenza A virus infections are common in pigs. But influenza viruses that commonly spread among pigs are generally different from the viruses that are common in humans. Occasionally, humans can be infected with swine influenza viruses, usually when in close contact with infected swine. Similarly, human influenza viruses can be transmitted sometimes from ill humans to pigs. It's important to note that swine influenza viruses have not been shown to be transmissible to people through eating or proper handling of pork or pig meat or other products derived from pigs. It's not a foodborne disease. When people are infected with influenza A viruses that are known to be genetically similar to viruses circulating in swine, these viruses are called variant viruses. From 2007, when novel influenza viruses, such as variant viruses, became a nationally notifiable disease, through  2010, 1 to 6 such viruses were reported to CDC each year. So, the summary of the recent cases. Each of the recent 16 H3N2 variant cases reported in the last few weeks reported contact with swine prior to their illness onset. In 15 of these cases, contact occurred while attending or exhibiting swine at agricultural fairs. All cases have been laboratory confirmed at CDC. While no human-to-human spread has been identified in recent cases, limited transmission from person to person is thought to have occurred on 3 occasions in the fall and winter of 2011. Importantly, sustained, efficient community transmission of this virus, H3N2V virus, has not been detected to date. Clinical symptoms of the H3N2 virus infections have been generally consistent with symptoms associated with seasonal influenza virus, such as fever, cough, sore throat, muscle aches, and headache. No hospitalizations or deaths have occurred from the 16 confirmed cases, but 3 cases were hospitalized among those detected last year in 2011. all of those hospitalizations occurred among people with underlying diseases that put them at high risk for severe influenza infection. Of the 16 recent cases, 13 of the cases are among children, and 3 are among adults. This is similar to the ages of the cases in 2011 and early 2012 that comprise the whole 29, and it actually is consistent with data from research studies that indicate that children may be more susceptible to the infection than adults. So what to do? Because most cases have occurred among persons who have had contact with swine in the setting of agricultural fairs, special attention is being paid to preventing transmission in these settings, as many fairs are ongoing now or soon will be underway. While detailed guidance for preventing infections in these settings is posted on CDC's website, key messages include: wash your hands with soap and water before and after exposure to animals. Avoid drinking, eating, or putting things in your mouth while in animal areas. And don't take food or drink into animal areas. If you have a condition that puts you at high risk for serious complications from influenza, such as lung disease or diabetes, consider avoiding exposure to pigs in swine barns this summer altogether, especially if sick pigs have been identified. Avoid close contact with animals that look or act ill when possible. And if you develop flu symptoms following direct or close contact with swine and you see your medical provider, tell the doctor about this exposure. They can advise if testing or treatment is appropriate. Medications that have been effective in treating or preventing seasonal influenza infections are also likely to be effective in treating these variant virus infections. CDC, along with state and local health departments and our colleagues in animal health, will continue to monitor for these cases and provide information on how to prevent them. Because influenza viruses are always evolving, we will watch closely for signs that the virus has gained an increased capacity for efficient and sustained human-human transmission. Thus far, we have not seen this type of transmission and therefore are not seeing features consistent with an early influenza pandemic. Even so, an H3N2 variant virus vaccine has been prepared, or a candidate has been prepared, and clinical trials are being planned for this year. So in summary, while sporadic cases of this variant virus have been observed for many years, we've detected cases of this variant virus with increasing frequency over the last year, particularly in the last month. We expect that additional cases of human infection with H3N2V virus will be identified either from contact from infected swine or through subsequent limited human-to-human spread. We also expect that some of the cases might be severe. The CDC and USDA websites have guidance on protecting yourself and your families, and as we learn about these cases and this virus, we'll keep you updated. Thanks very much.
Lori, I think we're ready for questions, please.
Thank you, sir. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. You will be prompted to record your name. Press star 1 to ask a question. Press star 2 to withdraw your request. One moment for the first question. Our first question comes from Miriam Falco with CNN Medical News Atlanta.
Hi, this is a question for the veterinarian. How do you identify an animal as being sick, a pig? And then for Dr. Brzee, if you can clarify again, there's no distinction, or are there distinctions between regular flu and this particular flu when it comes to I'm sick? Not necessarily in the DNA, but symptoms-wise. How would somebody suspect that they have this one as opposed to the other kind of flus that are out there?
Dr. Ferguson, you want to take the first question?
Okay, but if I can attempt to clarify, are you looking for what should somebody look for when they're looking at a pig? What should they be looking for? Or are you looking for how do we diagnose swine flu in pigs?
Yes, I'm asking from the consumer level. If you're telling people they're supposed to avoid contact with sick animals, how do people know that? I mean, if I'm a farmer, I would probably know that. If I'm somebody at a fair, I would not. I would personally. So I'm not talking about in the lab. I'm talking about in practical.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. That's what I assumed, but I just wanted to make sure. So pigs actually, in many ways, respond to flu viruses very similar to people. And sometimes, actually in pigs, the clinical signs are generally fairly mild. but they are often respiratory type signs. So if you see a pig that has a runny nose, that is coughing, they've got goop in their eyes, they're standing away from the rest of the pigs in the group, that would be a pig that looks sick.
Okay, and are there any other animals that are at risk for this? Any other mammals aside from humans that you know of?
We have identified this strain of virus in swine, and that's it. We identify other influenza viruses. I think you're familiar with avian influenza. So there are influenza viruses in birds. There have been some other strains in seals. And you can have strains of flu in dogs and in horses, but they are generally different. There are other strains other than this H3N2.
Thank you.
This is Joe Brzee. I'm happy to answer the second question. It's a good question, and in fact, you can't. Folks infected with the H3N2 variant virus have very similar symptoms and signs of their illness compared with people infected with normal human seasonal viruses. They tend to get a respiratory illness. They tend to get coughs, sore throat, muscle aches, headaches. They tend to have self-resolving illnesses like with seasonal flu. And they can be severe illnesses like seasonal flu, especially if you have underlying medical conditions that predispose you to severe illnesses with flu. And so based on clinical symptoms alone, they really are difficult or impossible to tell apart. That's why we're advising folks, if you have contact with swine and then you get sick, it's good to talk to your doctor and maybe be tested for this virus, because I think that the exposure variable, knowing that you're exposed to a pig, may be the one differentiating thing you can think about. But ultimately, testing using a test that we do here at CDC and some state health departments can do is the way to differentiate these two diseases.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mike Stobie with the Associated Press.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Actually, two. The first one's just confirming numbers. Dr. Brzee, did you say 16 cases in the last 3 weeks, but that includes 12 that were confirmed just this week? And then my second question was, of those cases, 10 were at this fair in southwestern Ohio, or they've been linked to that fair, the Butler County Fair. Was there something, what was going on at the Butler County Fair? Did a lot of people have contact with a particular pig, or was there some unusual type of contact there? Any clarification on why we got so many cases out of that one situation?
Yeah, Mike, it's a good question. So first, yeah, you're right. 12 cases are confirmed this week, and they're part of that 16 cases that have been confirmed in the last 3 weeks, so your numbers are correct. The investigations underway with the Ohio State, the Ohio County Fair that yielded these cases, I think clearly the usual risk factors at play in these infections were close contact with a pig, but the exact risk factors associated with these cases in this fair, I think, will be investigated over the next week or two by the Ohio State Health Department and the Butler County Health Department.
Thanks.
Okay, Mike, do you have a follow-up question?
No, those are the two. Thanks.
Okay, next question, Lori.
Thank you. The next question comes from Daniel Danoon with WebMD.
Thanks for taking my question. Dr. Brzee, would the seasonal flu vaccine have a component, the H3N2 component, be protective against this kind of flu? And can you talk to me about what is different about this strain of flu that from the seasonal H3N2? Thank you.
Yeah, good question. And so while the seasonal influenza virus vaccine has an H3N2 component in the vaccine every year, that H3 component is substantially different than the H3 viruses we're seeing that we're talking about today. And so the seasonal viruses likely won't provide protection against this virus. And so we definitely want people to get vaccinated with a seasons virus because flu's right around the corner, but it's not a way to prevent infection with this virus. The differences between this virus and seasonal viruses, and the thing that has us interested and concerned about about this, are what we're seeing, really. We're seeing this virus compared to other swine viruses. We're seeing more cases. We're seeing more clusters. And the clusters that we're seeing are larger. And so we want to understand why we're seeing more cases of this virus now than we have in the past. And so those are parts of the initial investigations. I think the differences between this virus and seasonal viruses, besides the virus themselves, or that this virus doesn't spread efficiently in humans like seasonal virus does. Remember that the seasonal influenza viruses we see every year are well adapted to humans. They grow well in humans. They spread well between humans. These viruses are, for all intents and purposes, animal viruses, and so they're not. They don't do well in humans. So we can get infection with them, and maybe we can pass it on to one or two folks. But they don't yet have the ability to spread efficiently between humans and therefore aren't human viruses yet. And so that's really the principal difference. And I think as we think about these viruses, as we learn about them over the next few weeks and few months, I think what we're really going to be looking for is evidence that the virus has made that change to be transmitting efficiently in humans. So far, we haven't seen that.
And might I just follow up by asking about the vaccine you've developed? Can you give us some more details about what you've done and what the clinical development program is?
I can't give you too many details because I'm probably not the person to give you the details. We can get more details up on our website and we can communicate with you offline. But it's a virus vaccine candidate that's made from one of these H3N2 variant viruses, which is very closely related to the viruses that we're seeing in these humans right now. The candidate's been developed by CDC, and through the usual pathway for vaccine development has now been shared with clinical partners who have developed clinical pilot lots of the vaccine and will start clinical trials to look at the safety and the immune responses to the vaccine in the next few months.
Okay, next question, Lori.
Our next question comes from Elizabeth Weiss with USA Today.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So it sounds like what you're saying is that while the thing you're concerned about is that this virus might become easily transmissible between humans, what you think might have happened is that we're looking at a swine virus that has somehow evolved to become more easily transmissible to humans. I mean, because I know that there are always viruses circulating in the swine population, so what's different about this one? Why is it suddenly popping up? And are we seeing these cases, do you think, because this is prime time for county fairs or because this virus has evolved in a new and more disturbing way?
Those are great questions. And I think you're right in your conclusion. Let me just say that I think that this virus is a bit different than previous swine viruses because it has acquired this genetic material from the pandemic H1 virus, the M gene, that we think might confer an advantage to it in terms of infecting humans and maybe even spreading among humans. And we think that not only because of what the M gene does in a cell, but more because what we're seeing, these larger clusters and more cases than we had seen in previous swine with previous swine viruses. And so I think we're seeing evidence that this virus may be different because we're seeing more cases. Whether it's due to the genetic makeup of the virus or whether it's due to the fact that we're looking more and we're more likely to find more viruses when we're looking more, or because we're seeing more interaction between humans and sick pigs, I don't know. And I think those will all be part of the investigations that will go on in the next couple of weeks. I think we're seeing them now clearly because this is the season when we see county fairs and we see lots of humans and pigs close to each other, especially kids and pigs close to each other. And so I think that's why we're seeing a spike right now. And I think there probably is something different about this virus. I think the take-home message is this virus is still principally a swine virus. And so when it infects humans, it can cause illness, but it doesn't seem to have onward spread from that human. And so I think that's the key message. It may be a little different, but it's still not a human virus. And therefore, we don't worry about it the same way we do as a human virus or an early pandemic virus.
Beth, do you have a follow-up?
No, that's fine. Thanks.
Next question, Lori.
Our next question comes from Bob Rose with CIDRAP News.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Just wanted to find out a little bit more about the candidate vaccine. Do you have any idea how soon that vaccine might be become available if it were needed, and what would be the trigger for actually making it available?
I don't know those details, but we can certainly get them to you offline. I think the trigger for going forward with vaccine production clearly is more evidence that a virus like this virus represents a pandemic threat. We're clearly not there yet, so that's all I can say. But I think that we can get more information about the vaccine development process for you. It's just not me that is the right person to give it to you.
Thank you.
Next question, Lori.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Timothy Martin, Wall Street Journal.
Hi, everyone. Can you guys lay out one? I think there was a nod at the end of your Dr. Breezy's comments about a forecast of future what the numbers might look like or what the severity of this virus spreading might look like. That's question one, if you could sort of clarify that forecast. And two, could you talk, what has history told us about how the swine flus tend to evolve over time? There's been a clustering or larger than normal clustering of these viruses, but what could we take from what's happened before? Thank you.
This is Joe. I'm happy to answer the first question and see maybe if Lisa wants to talk about swine influenza viruses generally for the second part of the question. But I did say that we would fully expect additional cases and even some severe cases. And that's based on the fact that there is this virus circulating in pig populations, and there are interactions between susceptible humans to these pigs. And so as long as that happens, we're likely to see additional cases. We'll try to prevent those clearly with good hygiene, with staying away from sick pigs, with some of the core public health messages that we're putting out along with our agriculture colleagues. And so, but even so, we wouldn't be surprised if there were some kids or some adults infected. And again, just because some people are prone to severe disease, we might see some severe disease in the future. So that's not surprising. I think as during the agricultural fair season, there may be more of those interactions than in other parts of the year, so we're likely to see additional cases in the next few weeks, I would suspect. I'm not predicting anything. I'm just projecting what we might see. Lisa, do you want to talk about swine virus?
Sure. So influenza and swine, actually it's a fairly common swine disease and has been recognized to be out there for many, many years. And producers generally deal with it. As I said earlier, oftentimes it's a relatively mild disease in swine. Over the past few years, however, we recognize that things are changing, and we've partnered both with our public health colleagues and with our state and industry colleagues to make a more concerted effort to see what flu viruses are out there in swine and how they're evolving. So we've really started our surveillance efforts in earnest over the past couple of years and are laying the groundwork to see what's going on out there. Since 2010, we've tested over 11,500 samples with about 1,400 cases with positive results, and have sequenced many of those. We haven't sequenced all of them yet. Much of that is in progress. You know, so we know what strains we're commonly seeing and are, as I said earlier, working with both our public health and industry colleagues to see what info we can glean from that. We want to make sure that we keep track of how that virus is changing out there and what's happening. We want to make available the isolates that we have for research and to just add to the general knowledge. And more importantly, from the animal health side, we want to make sure that, just as on the human health side, we have the appropriate diagnostic reagents and assays out there and vaccine products for the viruses that are occurring.
So I can assume that those 11,500 are samples taken from people who've gotten sick after having close contact with swine or pigs, I mean?
No, those are from pigs.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, sorry if I didn't make that clear.
Okay. Yeah, I guess what I'm – and then just one really quick follow-up, which is I guess what's unclear to me still is as you guys have studied more sample work from taken from pigs – do these types of viruses tend to pop up and disappear? Or I guess that's why I asked sort of a tracking question of, you know, if there's an expectation that this eventually could evolve in such a way that it would pass more easily from humans to humans, what's a time frame on that? Or could this go, I just don't want to, you know, overplay this or pump this up into something it's not.
So are you asking if in swine, the viruses that occur in pigs, if they kind of crop up and then go away?
Well, both, and then also with humans, you know, you guys are going to closely be monitoring, you know, does the virus evolve in such a way that it'll pass more readily and easily among humans? How long might that take for the virus to evolve, or is there no timetable?
I can provide a little bit of info on the swine side, but then I'll let Dr. Brzee see what he can do with the human health end of that. Just as an example, you know, with the sequenced information that we have, and let's use the pandemic H1N1 virus as an example, you know, we saw more instances of that in the viruses that we've identified last year than we have this year. You know, so does that mean that that virus is fading in the swine population? Could be. I don't think we completely have all of that information. We do see strains evolve and crop up and then disappear. I can't tell you exactly on time frames.
Yeah, this is Joe again. I completely agree. It's a good question, but in fact, the principles are that flu viruses are variable and evolve and mutate in ways that are hard to predict. And so I think that the public health principle, the public health goals are really to pay attention closely, not only to the virus and see how it's evolving and how it's mutating, but also importantly to the humans it infects. And I think we'll know that it has acquired the ability to efficiently spread between humans when we observe that it's acquired the ability to efficiently spread in humans. And whether it occurs next week or whether it occurs in 20 years, I don't think any of us are smart enough to predict right now. And so that's the reason I think when these cases pop up, we first want to hear about them, and we investigate them vigorously with our state and local health partners.
Okay, Lori, next question, please.
Our next question comes from Rob Stein, NPR.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. Two questions. One is, you said 15 of the 16 people got infected from contact with pigs at agricultural fairs. What about the 16th? How did that person get infected? And can you just describe how serious the illnesses were from all these cases?
Sure. So of the 16 cases, you're right, 15 likely were exposed at an agricultural fair. The 16th was a farmer that had a pig farm and was probably exposed occupationally. The 16 illnesses we're talking about were self-limited respiratory illnesses that all resolved. And so there were no cases among these 16 that were hospitalized, for instance.
I see. Okay. And of the 29 cases you've had reported so far,
I've had 3 hospitalizations among those.
Any deaths?
No.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Next question, Lori.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mira Oberman, AFP.
Oh, hi there. Thanks for taking the call. I just had another question in terms of issues of reporting. And I know obviously there's no exact number on this, but if you've got 16 cases reporting, I'm guessing there's a lot more cases where people just don't even bother going to the doctor. It doesn't sound like a very serious flu. So I'm curious kind of what, you know, previous studies have shown to be, if you've got this number of reported cases, what kind of estimate you might have on the ratio between reported and not reported. I mean, how many more cases could there be out there? And, you know, furthering that, why is it important for the public to see their doctors so that public health officials can follow these kinds of infections?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's not unlike seasonal flu where people get sick with a respiratory illness, get a cough, get a fever maybe for a few days, and few of those people actually go to the doctor, and even fewer of those get tested for flu. And so for seasonal flu, for every case we detect with a lab test, there's a whole lot more out there that actually sick with the flu. For this flu, it's probably the same. We certainly probably don't hear about everybody, and those that do present to doctors or hospitals, probably everyone's not tested. And I think at this point, early in an investigation, what we want to do is get more of those people to go to the doctor and get more of those people tested so we get a better feel for the scope of this outbreak. I think early case finding, the more complete we are, the better we are in understanding the outbreak and understanding the risk factors and how to prevent it. And so that's the space, or that's the time we're in right now. I think we're never going to be able to detect every case of a disease that occurs in an outbreak, and nor should we try, but we just want to know enough about the cases to inform our prevention strategies. But we don't have a way to estimate right now the total number of cases out there, just what we measure.
Great. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Lori, we'll take two or three more questions. So next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Michael Smith, MedPage Today.
Yeah, Dr. Brzee, two quick ones. Well, one quick one. I'm just doing the calculation. You have 29 cases reported, 16 in the last couple of weeks. Does that mean 13 last year, or how's the rest of them break down?
Yeah, it's actually a little more complicated. It's 12 in 2011. One case was reported early in 2012, and then these latest 16.
Okay, thank you. The other question is, can you talk a little bit about the M gene and what role it plays in transmissibility? Because we know that the pandemic flu is reasonably transmissible but didn't cause really serious disease. On the broad scale, of course, although some people were very ill. So what does it mean that this virus has somehow accumulated the M gene from that H1N1 virus?
Well, that's a good question. And while we don't know every function an M gene plays in the replication cycle of a virus, we do know it's related to viral replication and viral release from the cell. And so we are concerned that with an M gene that a virus acquires from a human virus, the H1N1 pandemic virus, or a virus that has adapted to humans and therefore spreads easily, the presence of the M gene in that virus may confer the potential for that virus to infect or spread between humans to a greater extent than, say, an M gene from a swine virus or an avian virus. But that's about all we know. I think there are virologists listening on the phone that could probably talk to you much more about the M gene, and I'm happy to talk offline and link you with those guys. But I think the principle, again, is that the M gene from a virus that's shown the ability to be adapted to humans that's now in a virus that's coming from swine, I think that gives us a little indication that it may happen more often and it may be more likely to spread between humans.
Okay, Lori, we'll take two more questions.
The next question is from Miriam Falco of CNN Medical News Atlanta.
Hi, thanks for taking another question. So some of the recent cases were in Ohio, most of them, and Indiana close by, and then you've got Hawaii. Is the possible source the same herd of pigs? Does that have any influence, or is this independently popping up? I mean, if it's I'm just trying to wrap my head around how is this getting from, middle of America and then to Hawaii?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And Lisa may wish to talk about swine surveillance and what they know about the spread of this virus. I'll say that there's, from the epidemiologic investigations, we don't have a link between humans or pigs in Hawaii and humans and pigs in Indiana and Ohio yet. Those angles are being looked at carefully, but so far there's no epidemiologic link between those two, Hawaii and the other two states. But I don't know if Dr. Ferguson wants to add anything.
Sure, I'll add a couple of things. The investigation is still ongoing, so as we get more information, perhaps we can answer that question slightly better. I'd have to say, though, that it's probably fairly unlikely that there was one swine herd that led to all of this, especially the Hawaii one. I do know, we have seen this virus in H3N2 with the M gene first identified in summer of 2010, and then we've had samples essentially from 11 states that show that similar type of virus. in that intervening time frame.
So are you saying then that not everybody who's gotten sick has the exact same mutated H3N2 swine flu?
I was speaking of viruses that we have isolated from swine over that time frame. I'll let Dr. Brzee address specifically on the human side.
Yeah, the viruses that we've detected in humans so far since last year are very similar to each other. And so virus to virus are not necessarily completely identical down to the base pair of the DNA, but they're very similar viruses.
Okay, Lori, we'll make this our last question, please.
Our final question comes from Mike Stobie of the Associated Press.
Hi, thanks for letting me go again. This is triggered by something Dr. Ferguson said. She was talking about how many samples have been taken from swine in the last several years, and it triggered a memory of discussions during the 2009 pandemic of concerns that we didn't have enough surveillance in animals of the H1N1. And Higgs, I was wondering, do we know with this new variant strain how old it is, and was it first detected in pigs or was it in humans? I was just kind of wondering if this was, we're seeing this because we've been looking harder since 2009. I was wondering if you could give us that context.
Okay. I think definitely, you know, as you noted, we have significantly increased our surveillance in swine since 2009, especially upped our numbers since 2010. Regarding this H3N2 with the matrix gene in it, as I noted a minute ago, we had first seen that virus in swine in late summer 2010. Now, whether it occurred out there prior to that, I don't know. Clearly, there is a factor of as you look a bit more, you find things. But what I can say is that's when we first saw it in swine.
Okay, Lori, this concludes our call. Thanks to Dr. Brzee and Dr. Ferguson for joining us. Reporters can call the CDC press office for more information. That number is 404-639-3286. During this call, you should have received via email a copy of the FluView report that Dr. Brzee referenced in the beginning of his comments. This report has additional information about the cases that he discussed. So you should have that in your email inbox, and if you don't, you can, again, call 404-639-3286 to ask for a copy of that FluView report. Thanks for joining us.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may disconnect at this time.